Welcome to Nightlights. I'm David Brent Johnson. Jazz is usually thought of as an album format, but once upon a time, you could drop a coin into a slot and fill up a bar or restaurant with the sounds of artists such as Duke Ellington, Charlie Parker, and Horace Silver spinning off a three-minute-long machine-operated platter. In the next hour, we'll hear those musicians and others as we explore jukebox jazz, jazz on 45 and 78, coming up on this edition of Nightlights.
Thank you.
saxophonist Ike Quebec performing his composition Blue Harlem with Tiny Grimes on guitar, Ram Ramirez on piano, Milt Hinton on bass, and J.C. Hurd on drums. Recorded for Blue Note Records in July 1944, and one of the then-young label's first hits, driven in part by its popularity on jukeboxes. Long before Spotify and Pandora and other streaming services, before you could seemingly access almost all of the music in the world through a few keystrokes on a computer or cell phone, there were jukeboxes, the earliest method of delivering multiple musical options to a listener, who for a nickel, or later a dime, and eventually a quarter, could pop a coin into a slot and hear the record of his or her choice. Though we think of jukeboxes as a mid-20th century phenomenon, coin-operated automatic sound-playing devices actually date all the way back to the 1890s. But it's true that jukeboxes didn't really break out in a big way until the early 1930s, spurred on by the end of Prohibition, as legal bars and taverns burst into existence across America. Record sales, mired in a terrible slump since the onset of the Depression, began to gain again, aided by the large-scale stock purchases of jukebox owners and operators. Some record companies even began subsidiary labels and encouraged their artists to make records aimed specifically for the growing jukebox market. One such artist, big band leader Duke Ellington, utilized a number of highly talented musicians from his orchestra to make small group dates under their own names that catered to the emerging jukebox trade. In 1938, his saxophonist Johnny Hodges waxed a song that invoked Hodges' nickname Jeep and became such a hit that it was associated with Hodges for the rest of his career. Here's Johnny Hodges doing the jukebox hit Jeep's Blues on Nightlights. Alto saxophonist Johnny Hodges performing Jeep's Blues, a jukebox hit recorded in 1938 with a small group of musicians from the Duke Ellington Orchestra, including Ellington himself on piano. Hodges would reprise Jeep's Blues at Ellington's legendary 1956 Newport concert in an attempt to calm an overly jubilant crowd after Paul Gonsalves's epic 27-chorus saxophone solo on Diminuendo and Crescendo in Blue. As was and would be the case in radio, sometimes the intended A-side of a single found less favor on the jukeboxes than its flip side. One such notable instance occurred with Billie Holiday's 1939 single Strange Fruit, a song that became an anti-lynching anthem, and which her record company had no interest in recording, giving her a pass to make it instead with the much smaller Commodore label. But though Strange Fruit was an immediate sensation and soon passed into popular culture legend, it was Strange Fruit's companion song, Fine and Mellow, written by Holiday, that became a hit in jukebox venues. In this next set, we'll also hear another iconic recording from 1939 that found favor on jukeboxes, saxophonist Coleman Hawkins' Body and Soul. First, the flip side of Billie Holiday's Strange Fruit that became a hit instead, though it has retained none of the historical significance of its shellac sibling, Fine and Mellow, on Nightlights. Saxophonist Coleman Hawkins performing Body and Soul, and singer Billie Holiday before that with Fine and Mellow, the jukebox hit and flip side of her iconic Strange Fruit recording. By 1939, the year that those two records came out, there were an estimated 300,000 jukeboxes in place across America, in bars and taverns and diners and soda shops and numerous other establishments. According to jazz scholar Eddie Dietemeyer, the boxes utilized 30 million records that year, and their success caused a national coin shortage. As these music machines continued their dominant march into popular culture, there were even songs that referenced jukeboxes. One, a hit for a bandleader whose records had enjoyed many spins across America in recent years when it was released in 1942. And it also invoked the day of the week that business surveys found to be the most profitable for jukebox use. Here's Glenn Miller and Jukebox Saturday Night on Nightlights.
Mopping up soda pop rickies to our heart's delight.
Dancing to the swingaroo quickies, jukebox Saturday night.
Goodman and Kaiser and Miller help to make things bright.
Mixing hot licks with vanilla, jukebox Saturday night. They put nothing past us,
me and Honey Lamb.
Making one Coke last us
till it's time to scram.
Money we really don't need that.
We make out all right.
Let the other guy feed that jukebox Saturday night.
After sipping a soda, we got a scheme. Somebody else plays the record machine. It's so easy to say pet names when you listen to the trumpet of Harry James.
Glenn Miller in 1942 with Jukebox Saturday Night, the last hit to chart for his civilian orchestra, with Miller off to the military to form what would become known as the Army Air Force Band. Miller, like Tommy and Jimmy Dorsey, Benny Goodman, and many other big band leaders, benefited from and offered public testimony to the impact of jukebox play on their careers. The World War II years brought a temporary halt to new jukebox production owing to wartime needs, though jukeboxes remained highly popular and even found a new home in youth centers that were open to counter the growing problem of juvenile delinquency. By the time the war ended in 1945, the big band sound that had occupied prime place with youthful jukebox consumers began a slow fade in popularity, giving way to the rise of jump blues, R&B, and pop ballads. And bebop enjoyed a surge of attention as well. Many of the popular jukebox records of the late 1940s and early 50s, even if not defined as jazz per se, certainly had a jazzy sound. We'll hear two such hit records in our next set, starting off with Johnny Otis's Harlem Nocturne on Nightlights. Tenor saxophonist Gene Ammons performing My Foolish Heart, a recording made for the Chess label that singer Billie Holiday cited as one of her favorite records, and one that became a jukebox favorite, particularly on the south side of Chess's hometown, Chicago. Johnny Otis and Harlem Nocturne before that, another jukebox favorite that also became frequent musical accompaniment for strippers, along with saxophonist Jimmy Forrest's jukebox hit, Night Train. I'll have more jukebox jazz in just a few moments. You can hear many previous Nightlights programs, including other jukebox jazz hits on the show Jazz for Mad Men, on our website at wfiu.org/nightlights. Production support for Nightlights comes from Columbus Visitor Center, celebrating everywhere art and unexpected architecture in Columbus, Indiana. Modern architecture and design to explore 45 minutes south of Indianapolis. More at columbus.in.us. I'm David Brent Johnson, and you're listening to Jukebox Jazz on Nightlights.
That little jukebox right over there is like a magic key, for it can take me anywhere on wings of memory. I'd give a dollar for a dime. I've got to hear that record play again. Turn love's December into May again. Bring me the thrill just one more time. I'd give a dollar for a dime. I've got to hear that sweet refrain again that carries me down.
I'm featuring jukebox jazz in this edition of Nightlights, 78s and beginning with the 1950s, 45 RPM records that were smaller and less breakable. Newly manufactured jukeboxes around the same time also upped the number of records they could contain from 24 to 100, giving users far more musical options. The term jukebox, by the way, stems from so-called juke joints, music venues that cater to African Americans, especially in the South, and where one could find jukeboxes as well. The word juke may have been derived from a West African term that meant rowdy or disorderly. Industry reps in the late 1930s and early 40s had hated the term, preferring to call the machines automatic phonographs, but popular usage eventually made avoiding the jukebox moniker impossible. Whatever one called them, they continued to be highly influential throughout the 1950s. Tommy LaPuma, an aspiring musician in those days who went on to become a renowned record producer and head of Verve Records, later in his life recalled a seminal jukebox experience, saying that in the 1950s, the jukebox was the deal. As a saxophone player, I was gigging, although still at school. I'd sit in with black musicians. The jukeboxes in the hood were outrageous. One day I'm sitting there making myself scarce because I was underage, and suddenly out of the jukebox comes this record. It was Just Friends by Charlie Parker. That first time I heard it, I couldn't believe it. Here's what Tommy LaPuma heard on Nightlights. Thank you. Charlie Parker and Just Friends, a recording that was a jukebox hit in the early 1950s. With the advent of the 45 in the 1950s and its continuing success into the 1960s, singles made for jukebox and radio play began to be mixed with those outlets in mind. As jazz musician Jim Sangre has noted, the mastering tended to be loud and hot so that the music jumped out at you in a viscerally exciting way at the bar or in your car. The iconic Blue Note jazz label certainly found value in aiming their product at this kind of market. Mosaic Records founder and former Blue Note employee Michael Cascuna told me that in the 50s, jukeboxes that carried jazz were very popular in urban areas. The fact that Blue Note producer Alfred Lion did sessions that were just for 45 releases underlines their profitability. Jukebox services paid for the single that they got from companies, so there was money to be made. And cuts from albums edited down or broken into parts 1 and 2 helped expose a lot of jazz and contributed to album sales. I often ran into jukeboxes as late as the early 1980s that still had John Coltrane's Blue Train in them. Jazz producer Michael Cascuna on the relationship between jazz and jukeboxes in the mid-20th century. We'll hear a couple of Blue Note jukebox records now, starting off with Horace Silver, Bill Henderson, and Senor Blues on Nightlights.
They call him way down Mexicali way. Senoritas falling for him with the hope that he will stay. By the time that they love him, Senor Blues done gone away. Well, he's tall and good looking, and he always knows just what to say. Yes, he's tall and good looking, and he always knows just what to say. By the time that they love him, Senor Blues done gone away. I don't know why, don't know why, don't know why. I'm a wandering, wandering guy. With no one gal to lay my head by.
and lonely and blue. Cause the one gal I love won't be true. Got the blues and it's all cause of you. Got the blues and it's all cause of you.
Edited 45s from the Blue Note label that were made with jukeboxes in mind. Guitarist Kenny Burrell's Chitlins Con Carne, and before that, pianist Horace Silver, joined by vocalist Bill Henderson on Senor Blues. Prestige Records was another label that generated many jukebox-friendly singles, especially in the soul jazz category that was popular in many African-American neighborhood venues that had jukeboxes. A 45 edit of organist brother Jack McDuff's smoking live performance of Rock Candy gives us a good taste of what could often be heard blaring from those bars and taverns. We'll be right back. organist brother Jack McDuff with the 45 version of Rock Candy, a jukebox hit for Prestige Records. Jazz writers and producers such as David Rosenthal and Bob Porter have attested to the widespread presence and popularity of jazz and jukeboxes in black neighborhoods throughout the 1950s and 60s, mixed in with R&B and blues and soul, and many records blurring the lines of those genres. But jazz records even showed up on jukeboxes in communist bloc countries in Europe, such as East Germany and Hungary, although Bulgaria did not join the party, blasting jazz as corruptive and corrosive, a decadent Western influence that has no place in pure communist life. Presumably, the Bulgarian apparatchiks would have counted bossa nova and R&B-influenced jazz particularly offensive. We'll hear two popular 45 jukebox edits in this next set that reflect those musical trends of the early 1960s, starting off with Stan Getz, Astrid and João Gilberto, and Quiet Nights of Quiet Stars on Nightlights.
Quiet nights of quiet stars, quiet chords from my guitar, floating on the silence that surrounds us. Quiet thoughts and quiet dreams, quiet walks by quiet streams, and a window that looks out on Corcovado. Oh, how lovely.
Sempre assim, com você perto de mim, até o apagar da velha chama. E eu que era triste, descrente desse mundo, ao encontrar você eu conheci. O que é felicidade, meu amor?
We'll be right back.
Jimmy McGriff and I've Got a Woman Part 1, preceded by Stan Getz and Astrid and Zhao Gilberto's 45 edit version of Quiet Nights of Quiet Stars, two records you could have likely found on many jukeboxes in the early 1960s. As the 1960s progressed, jukeboxes remained popular, but they began to face new challenges, perhaps foremost among them the sudden popularity of long-playing albums with younger listeners and buyers. Jukeboxes could not accommodate the LP. Jazz artists, too, began to expand their musical conceptions and experiments in ways that weren't as 45-friendly. Still, in the late 1960s and early 70s, you could walk into some bars and hear a classic jukebox edit with a soulful groove like this one. Saxophonist Eddie Harris and Listen Here on Nightlights. Eddie Harris with a 45 edit version of his late 1960s hit Listen Here. By the mid-1970s, jukeboxes were considered by many in the trade to be in decline. Fast food restaurants that were multiplying across the landscape were less inclined to have jukeboxes, and the long-running problem of bars and taverns catering to customers who preferred to watch sporting events on television continued. By 1974, Wurlitzer, once the biggest jukebox manufacturer of them all, had ceased production. Starting in 1978, jukeboxes were also no longer exempt from music royalty payments, as they had been since 1909. In the early 1990s, a number of establishments converted from 45-playing jukeboxes to CD-playing ones, which finally made the album format accessible to jukebox listeners. Ultimately, though, jukeboxes became seen more as nostalgia items, charming pop culture remnants of the mid-20th century. Still, they set an early model for the now widespread concept of being able to sample and choose from a wide range of recordings, and they helped to promote the success of many jazz artists from the big band era to the 1970s. I'll close with a 45 edit of a popular 1973 recording by pianist Herbie Hancock, distilled from the 15-minute long version that appeared on his breakthrough album Headhunters. Herbie Hancock and Chameleon on Nightlights. I'm With the 45 edit of Herbie Hancock's 1973 hit Chameleon. Thanks for tuning in this edition of Nightlights. Special thanks to Michael Cascuna, Joe Medchuk, and members of the Organissimo Jazz Discussion Forum. You can hear many previous Nightlights programs on our website at wfiu.org/nightlights. Production support from Nightlights comes from Columbus Visitor Center, celebrating everywhere art and unexpected architecture in Columbus, Indiana. Modern architecture and design to explore 45 minutes south of Indianapolis. More at columbus.in.us. Nightlights is a production of WFIU and part of the educational mission of Indiana University. I'm David Brent Johnson, wishing you good listening for the week ahead.